The Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by you. We're seeking sponsors to support our mission to share the stories, passions, and personalities of the people shaping Boulder's unique tech and startup scene. If you'd like to be part of this project and reach a growing and enthusiastic audience, shout at us via Twitter at Boulder Tech Cast or send me a note at joel@dojo4.com. Welcome to the Boulder Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Davis. Our guest for episode 57 is Bill Baldwin, managing principal of Cressa, the world's largest commercial real estate advisory firm, exclusively representing occupiers. Bill and I discuss all things co-working, including a look at the WeWork situation, the costs, benefits, and risks of the co-working model, where the co-working industry is headed, and how your co-working space defaulting on its obligations could put your company out of business. All of that and more as the Boulder Tech Podcast speaks with Cressa's Bill Baldwin. You're the managing principal at the world's largest commercial real estate advisory firm, exclusively representing occupiers. How does that differ from other commercial real estate firms?
Yeah, that's a good question. Our organization really is only focused on the occupier real estate versus the landlord or the developer of real estate. And so when we work with a client is always somebody who is basically paying the rent versus collecting the rent. And it's a very big difference in terms of who your fiduciary is for. Oftentimes, many of our competitors have found themselves in a situation where they have a conflict of interest where their firm or even themselves are representing both a landlord or a tenant in a negotiation, and it creates a bit of a problem. We've eliminated that by exclusively representing the occupier. And so we have the highest ethical standard in the industry that way. But also what happens out of that is you develop a philosophy and you learn a lot about how a company operates and what challenges a company has internally as a business, and then you're able to craft real estate solutions around that. I've worked with a lot of high-tech companies throughout the years. I've seen a lot of big mistakes made, people who have lack of experience around what their growth patterns might be, where their funding's tied to, and how much real estate they should take down. And hopefully our clients try to avoid that kind of stuff by crafting a solution. You know, you think about a startup company just receives $20, $30 million. They need to hire a whole bunch of people. Well, what happens 18 months or 24 months down the road? Sometimes it's binary. There's no more. So why sign up for a five-year lease and spend 30% of your funding on real estate when there's other solutions that could work for it?
And is that where co-working comes in?
Co-working's a great solution. At the scale that it's currently at is only a recent phenomenon. And by that, I mean, WeWork certainly did it. They've run through probably around $10 billion worth of money to get it at the global scale. There were operators doing that well in advance. One of my first projects that I worked on was for a company called SoftBank. At the time, I worked with Brad Feld and Chris Wand at that project to help them build out their offices, and they served that as an incubator to their funded companies. And that was probably almost 20 years ago now. So that was a really successful project from the aspect of them providing a creative space for their funded companies to grow and nurture in without having to take on large amounts of space and feel isolated. The real growth of co-working and the real greatness of that business model is the flexibility that they offer, which is to basically lease you one space, one desk, one office, one room at a time for variable lengths. And it works very, very well for young companies, startup companies, or companies who are expanding into new markets and may not know how long they're going to be there, may not know how a market might respond to them and their offering. So it's a great way for companies to test the water as they grow into a market.
So with the work that you do with Cressa, would a co-working space be a potential client of yours to come in and say, we want to create a co-working space, and you would help them find that?
Some of our people are doing that throughout the country, absolutely. There's probably hundreds of these organizations. Probably the big three are WeWork, a group called IWG, which is a company called Regus, publicly traded company that's been in the business for 30, 40 years. And then another group called Knotel, K-N-O-T-L, I think is how it's spelled. And all of them have differing business models in terms of how they acquire their space. For example, some of them may use brokers, some of them may have their own internal brokers in there. I personally am not working with any of co-working spaces right now looking to acquire space, but I know there's people in our firm across the globe that are helping them.
You talked about the benefits of the co-working space. What are some of the drawbacks to that?
Well, you're witnessing one of the biggest ones right now. The debacle of WeWork is really challenging, and that's more of a business problem on WeWork's side than an indictment of the industry. WeWork was expanding so quickly and burning through so much money that they ran into a challenge of creating a lot of risk for their members. And I'll just give you the biggest risk that I see. Imagine that you're in a situation where you go to work one day and the door is locked. So you go to the property manager and you say, I can't get into my space. The door is locked. And the property manager says, well, your co-working space has not been paying the rent for 30 days or 60 days or 90 days. They're in default of your lease. Well, what does that have to do with me? I'm a member of that, but that has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with you. You don't have any rights to your space. You don't have any rights directly with the landlord as a member of one of these co-working situations, and it puts you at a great deal of risk.
Have you seen that actually happen?
I've seen examples of it's happening, but it really hasn't manifested in a really big way. It could potentially happen with WeWork. WeWork typically signs their leases on what's called a single purpose entity, an SPE. And those entities are the effective guarantor of the lease. And as a result, WeWork can let a SPE fail without it coming back into the parent corporation. And there could be some of that starting to happen as WeWork looks to find ways to shore up their portfolio and default in certain locations. But I would think that if they have other spaces available in their portfolio, they would start to move their members to the other spaces where they have room. And that would be a real indication if they start doing that. If you're an occupier, WeWork's in trouble.
What's the recourse for a tenant of somebody like WeWork in the event that the building were to be locked and they can't access their business, basically? How do they get to their stuff?
Yeah, we should really clarify, because this is a legal issue, that they're not tenants, they're members. And typically, particularly in a WeWork case, you sign a membership license, and there's a whole bunch of benefits associated with that. But I don't know that there is any recourse. I think that they have to wait through to see what works out between or transpires between the landlord and a WeWork or any other co-working operator that maybe is failing in their lease. But it's important to note that typically as a member, you have no direct rights to your space. You only have a permit right to the space.
So all you can do basically is wait for WeWork and the property owner to work things out.
Could be, yeah. Yeah, and that could put you out of business pretty fast. I've read a number of WeWork's membership agreements, and they're highly flexible, but also the ones that I have read do not offer you very many rights in the event of a default of the master lessor, which in that case is WeWork.
My understanding is that WeWork, I heard someone describe them not as a co-working space company, but as basically as a real estate company. They're acquiring properties around the world. And I guess I was surprised when I heard that they were as upside down as they are, because you, at least living on the Front Range, maybe it's easy to have a skewed perspective, but it seems like properties are hot. It seems like WeWork, having all of these properties in their portfolio, would be doing well just for the sake of owning the properties, or I guess they're not necessarily owning them in a lot of cases, it turns out.
Yeah. WeWork had a nominal valuation of $47 billion. Their business model is really, to your first part of your question, the business model is basically acting as a sublessor. A lot of different legal fine point differences, but if you were to look into their financial model, they were being valued as a software model, right? In the software model, there's huge capital expense that goes into the development of the core software. Typically, a company might go public, but then once that major capital expense is set in, you then have monthly recurring revenues that basically pay very significant margins at that point in time. The challenge in WeWork's model is WeWork has been leasing almost all of their facilities. Very high rents. So 60 to probably 70% of WeWork's expense structure is fixed. They have to pay rent to the landlord, so you can't get that high leverage model that you get in a software model once something is initially developed and the platform's initially developed, and then you just keep feeding and scaling off of that same initial platform. In order for WeWork to scale, they had to go acquire more space under lease and more space under lease. And as they grew, they also grew their operating expense, or maybe it might fall into their cost of revenue expense. That's a huge number. And you can never get net operating income margin expansion like you would in a software model, under a model where your majority expense, 70, 80% of your expense perhaps is fixed. So the WeWork model was probably not destined to succeed at those high valuations.
And is that something that was always clear to everyone? Like, why would people invest in that if that were the case? What was the upside? At what point was WeWork going to say, okay, now we're actually making money?
It's a brilliant concept. Mass production of space as a service and a SaaS model, right? We all know that in a software model, but space as a service and a SaaS model. I don't know that people evaluated the long-term implication, or maybe the investors didn't understand truly how that worked. They had to be really, really smart people to invest in this. And I think that SoftBank has just put in another $5 billion and accelerated a $1.5 billion warrant into WeWork to continue to invest in the model. So there must be some redeeming value in there, but I don't know why. I would personally not have invested into WeWork at any multiple north of a billion because of knowing that their capital expense and their operating expense numbers are so high. And so these big multiples that they were trying to get off of their net income just would never be there.
Do you think WeWork is going to survive?
Yes. Again, one of the greatest things they did is a single purpose entity. A lot of hotels do that. They go into partnerships with a developer under a single purpose entity for each hotel that they're developing. And if one fails, the whole company doesn't fail, just that one little hotel failed, and then they and the developer work things out. WeWork will have to scale down. WeWork will have to shed properties that are underperforming. And WeWork will ultimately have to raise their rate probably to their members in order to survive. It'll be very interesting to see what the growth is. Since this IPO news has come out within WeWork, the level of marketing of their available spaces has really amped up. They're very concerned. And what they're trying to do is say, hey, we're okay. We've got these great spaces coming available to us. Come lease with us. But I can tell you, for me, representing one of my clients going into WeWork in any sort of scale, I'd be highly suspicious of that, right? It's what is the future of the company? If I were to do that, I would want to go into a different, more established operator, something maybe like a Regus, which offers a concept similar to WeWork, like Spaces or Knotel, as I've mentioned, or there's dozens of these just floating around in the Front Range here.
So on one hand, we've got the object lesson of WeWork. And on the other hand, we have the incredible popularity of co-working spaces. So how do startups and companies looking to go into a co-working space, how do they protect themselves? How does the model change so that it works for everybody?
This is a great question, and I'm a dead example of that. I work within our Portland office as well, and we, this weekend coming up, are moving into a co-working space. In that particular situation, we did our due diligence and recognized that the operator is also the owner of the building. Gives us great comfort. It's almost as if we have a direct lease rather than we have some sort of membership license in that. And so if something happens to them, we've got a much better position versus having a few floors in a million square foot building that if the operator goes sideways, I have no rights, I have no position to anything. So for us, it gave us a lot of comfort to that. I think it's important to do your due diligence. Ask for the financials. Ask for what happens if something happens. Ask for notification. You would want to try and put into your membership agreement that if you receive a default notice from your landlord, I get a notice that you're in default of your lease. And a default could be a whole bunch of things, meaning somebody was playing music too loud, or somebody brought a dog into a property that wasn't supposed to, things like that. Those are all sorts of default notifications. You might want to just limit to a monetary default that, well, we haven't paid our rent. And in the event of a monetary default, you might be able to strike into your membership agreement that you have the right to terminate. The business model, as you mentioned, it's a phenomenal business model. What will come out of this will be great opportunity, I think, primarily for landlords. What will happen is these operators who have gone in there and proved the concept, the landlords are going to realize the margin that they're giving up by not operating the concept. They're going to stop doing that and go into the business themselves. CBRE, which is the largest global real estate company in the commercial sector, has formed a group called HANA. And HANA is really designed to create an operating brand on behalf of landlords for co-working spaces. So you might find a very large landlord who has a floor that they would like to put into a co-working space, but don't want to have an operator come in and run that, and they lose the margin. So they'll have CBRE come in and do it for a service and run the co-working space, and the landlord will be able to have an increased margin on that particular floor than they might be able to get from a regular corporation.
You spend a lot of time in Portland, and they've got a burgeoning tech scene there as well. Do you see many striking differences or similarities between what's going on there and what's going on here on the Front Range?
From the co-working perspective or more from the business perspective?
Either or both.
Okay. Co-working is hitting there hard and doing well. Like you mentioned, there's a lot of startup. It's a great entrepreneurial spirit there. It's, you know, how Boulder is a microcosm of what's happening throughout the Front Range. I would say that Portland and the city in of itself is more of the macrocosm, if that's a word, where there's so much creativity happening into that place. We're representing a large number of tenants coming out of San Francisco going into there that are there for attraction of labor. So I think that that market's doing really well. And I think the co-working market is doing well. I did happen to be in a WeWork space recently, though. I can tell you that it was a little tired. You can tell there was a little deferred maintenance in it because of the heavy use into it. And the occupancy levels didn't look right. And if that is an arbiter of what's happening in the other co-working operations throughout the city, maybe there's a little weakness in the market there, but I don't think so. The one that we've gone into is something called Central, C-E-N-T-R-L. That thing is vibrant and alive, and there's so much energy in there being created by all the companies that are in there. It is a great place for us to put our office. We're a high-growth office in Portland. We're doubling every year. And the reason we went in there is why most companies should consider a co-working space is we could get an 18-month window. I expect to grow and double in the next 18 months from my 9 to maybe 18 people. If I went into a traditional leasing situation, I wouldn't have the flexibility to be able to do that, both in terms of acquiring more space on an on-demand basis, as well as having the flexibility of the shorter term to then reevaluate in 12 or 18 months. Typical leases are anywhere from 3 years at the very minimum direct basis to as long as 20 years, depending upon the structure. Large, what they call sale leasebacks, have to be around in 15 to 20 year time frame to get really attractive financing from the investor.
So we've got the situation with WeWork. Are smaller independent co-working spaces operating differently, or tenants typically facing the same risk with them as they are with WeWork? Galvanize comes to mind. They've been growing along the Front Range. Are they any different in terms of how those agreements are set up and the risk posed to the members?
Yeah, in some cases, again, some of these operators, and I think Galvanize owns a couple of their locations, but the operators that own the locations are going to be able to withstand the ups and downs of the economy. It's the ones that are at the peak of the market rents when funding maybe drops or the economy slackens. I think that that's going to be the first place where people pull back. It's much easier for me as a small entrepreneur to pull back into my house and work out of my house and cut costs, which are significant. These operators typically run between $5,000 to $7,500 per desk. You know, at $5,000, if I've got five people in there, that's $25,000 that I can cut immediately by pulling out of there. So I think you'll see some of those types of things happening, and there will be risk with some of these smaller operators, certainly the ones that are not as sophisticated. So I would say to go with caution. We heard these just lofty valuations. Nobody thought WeWork would have been in the situation that they were in as quickly as it happened, and nobody was doing the due diligence behind it. And when you would try, WeWork would not give it to you. They would simply say, here's our membership agreement. I'd like to see the financials on this entity. Here's our membership agreement. If you don't like it, I'll lease the space to somebody else.
You mentioned with the economy starts to slide, and I am hearing whispers that another recession may be around the corner or some type of big correction anyway. What kind of monkey wrench does that throw into all of this, especially the Front Range market?
Yeah, I think we're less susceptible to that. Although what will really work tough on us is a pullback in tech investment. We've got a lot of really great companies here, and we've got a lot of really great companies in incubation. So as companies start to go for second or third rounds of funding, and those types of companies are the ones who are oftentimes, particularly up here in Boulder, into the co-working spaces, I think that, again, it's to my point earlier that we'll pull back, we'll go into our house, we'll find space that's very inexpensive. There'll be a whole bunch of opportunities to take advantage of larger corporations that are pulling back and subleasing space. And you might be able to go in at $1,000 a desk. You might be able to go in at all sorts of different flexible terms and conditions through a sublease situation from a very strong company who is just trying to cut their overhead. And the first place they did it was by cutting the people. And now they're stuck with the space because it's a few years left.
So you'd mentioned earlier that when you are considering moving into a co-working space to make sure to get a look at the lease agreement or to at least have some sort of triggered notification if the owner goes into default or the co-working space goes into default with the owner. Are there any other things that companies should be asking when they're looking into these types of spaces?
Yeah, you would want to make sure that you have certain termination rights. The people who are running these businesses, these operating companies, they're entrepreneurs just like the companies that are in there, and they're trying to run a business and create a margin out of that. And that's their business, and that's the choices that they've made in their business. But as part of executing their business, if they're creating contingent risk on you as the occupier who is supporting them in their business, you should not put yourself in that situation. And so you want to try and do as much due diligence. Ask the hard questions. If they're unwilling to give you a copy of their financial statements, that's a really big red flag. If they're unwilling to give you the right of notification that they've been in default with their landlord, another red flag. And it's all a matter of your risk tolerance. Again, you could potentially show up one day, go in your space, try your key, it doesn't work. I don't know what impact that would have in anybody else's business. I know on mine, all our computers in there, all our intellectual properties in there, all of our accounting, everything is in those computers and in that space. If we couldn't access that space, it would cause material damage to us as a business.
Bottom line, don't go into this naively or with your eyes blinded thinking that you're covered because whatever, your deal isn't with the owner that's the co-working spaces, but it could affect you pretty severely.
That's the implication. I'm probably extrapolating out to what could happen. But as you were talking earlier, if there's a pullback in the economy and you walk into a space and it's 50, 60% occupied and it's been around a while, probably not where you want to go.
Right. You want to go the bustling place.
You want to go the bustling place that's full. And you'll know it. You just have that feel when you walk into a place, you'll know that they're not in trouble. And one of the great things about WeWork was they had the really deep pockets to build these spaces out, to operate them, put all these amenities into there and capitalize all that stuff. That stuff costs money. If you cannot generate enough revenue off of your membership occupying that space, you're upside down. Just like if I can't generate enough revenue to pay my costs or you can't generate enough revenue to pay the cost of operating your business, you're upside down. You have a big problem. What I just want to advise people is they should go into these things really knowing and understanding. They're great entrepreneurs, but think about friends who have shut their businesses down that have been entrepreneurs that haven't made it and the impact that that might have if somebody shuts their business down. Meanwhile, you're occupying the space.
Does Cressa work at all with restaurants?
No.
Because I was curious if you had any thoughts. A popular thing now is sort of the hipster food court, you know, where you've got a space with 8 restaurants in it and mm-hmm. a central bar. And that's definitely gaining in popularity in Denver. And they're starting to happen here in Boulder as well.
You bet.
And so it's sort of the restaurant version of the co-working space. But do you see it that way?
100%. But those are controlled by the landlord. There's not an intermediary in there, such as a WeWork or a Regis or a Knotel, coming in and setting those operations up. So typically it's directly the landlord, and I'm thinking of the dairy block in downtown Denver. That's all controlled by the developer, by the owner of the building. And so if one restaurant goes out, and frankly, they probably like that to have a little variety popping in and popping out of those things.
I think that's even part of the design in some
100%.
Of those places.
Yeah. It's almost like having the food truck court come in, you know?
Right.
One week there's 3 guys, and then the next week, 3 different operators in there. And I think that's a really brilliant way to use a lot of retail space that might not normally get attraction for your traditional retailer selling clothing or goods or whatever it might be. I know Doug Green's done that here in Boulder off Walnut, and from what I can tell, it's a pretty successful event. I can tell you the one in the Dairy Block and in Central Market in Denver, they're killing it.
And Avanti, the Rosetta Hall, I believe, is the one you're talking about on Walnut, and then Avanti coming to Boulder and the Cheesecake Factory space. I'm sure that's going to do well. And it just makes me think about the big restaurant spaces that are currently vacant in Boulder. Reuben's, Ahi, Ted's Montana Grill. You know, you go down Pearl Street and all those big sort of cornerstone spaces have been sitting vacant for months to years now. And do you have any thoughts on that? It occurred to me, like, put those food court type places in all of these and let's share the risk. It just seems like things are downsizing in terms of space needed and there's a lot of big spaces available.
Yeah. I'll just look at it like a Ted's, right? To make that happen for a Ted's, that's a really cost prohibitive venture. Couple challenges with it. You've got to provide enough seating. You've got to provide individual kitchens. Some places, maybe you can do a shared kitchen environment, but it sort of defeats the purpose of you want to, over here, we're doing fish. This is pizza over here. Back over here is barbecue, right? And so when you go into these places, they have their own little individual contained kitchens that are supporting some sort of a little dining area or a common dining area. I mean, it's almost, think of the old mall food court on steroids. That's what's happening. To do it into a small scale restaurant of 1,500 to 3,000 square feet, you might be able to get a couple people who can put some sandwiches together, but you couldn't get enough of the kitchen equipment in place to make that happen. You have to find a much larger space to put 2, 3, 4 kitchens in there.
Okay. Do you have any thoughts, though? Because I do. I work down on Pearl Street, and I walk by these vacant spaces, and it just feels like, in a town where there's so much demand for space, on one hand, it seems crazy that these spaces are sitting open, and I wonder, how do you see all that shaking out? What's going to happen with those spaces?
Yeah, again, I'm not an expert on retail and specifically restaurant retail, but I've been doing business in Boulder for 30 years. I live here. I moved here 5 years ago, and I can't tell you the number of restaurants that turn over. It's a very common theme, and where you might have a Ted's in one spot and it probably in negotiations right now for that space for another occupier, and somebody else will come in. It's very expensive to build out restaurant space. I don't know if you've ever been in a Ted's, but if you walk in there, it's lots and lots of millwork for the wooden booths and things like that. And somebody walking into that space has to be capitalized enough to go in there and say, yeah, we can keep the kitchen, but we have to spend hundreds of dollars per square foot to redo everything else that's in there, and the economics don't work. The rents also, particularly along the Pearl Street Mall, are spectacularly high, and a lot of operators just can't afford to pay that.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how all of that shakes out. Is there anything else that you'd like to add or that I haven't asked?
Yeah, I think it's, I'll tell you, Colorado is such an exciting place to be. You spend any time in like startup week, either Denver or Boulder, you realize the amount of enthusiasm and intellectual capital that's run around this place. And the great stories are that we now have venture capital funding looking at these companies, and we can move it sort of beyond the original, you know, Brad Feld and Mobius and Foundry, and some of the bigger players are coming in, and we're seeing a bigger scale happen here. And I think that that's really exciting. Companies that are looking to scale, these flexible office environments are terrific. They are really great solutions. People should know they are very expensive. They're sold as being not expensive, but they are very expensive. The barrier to entry to these workplaces is very low. And I'll just give you a real simple example. A traditional office user would use space at 200 square feet per person. Okay. The WeWork and the Regus are using space at 60 to 70 square feet per person. So in the space that you and I are sitting in, there would be somewhere between 3 to 4 people occupying that space.
This is not a big room that we are in right now.
Right. It's a 10 by 12 room. And so one of the great things that they have done is created high density space and made it relatively low cost per employee. But if you're paying $5,000 to be in one of those, you have to think about it. The operator has to pay rent. They have to pay the overhead of management. They have to pay the overhead of capital expense depreciation. They have to recoup all of this stuff. And if you were an occupier or a company, you and I could go and lease this room and put 3 of us in here for a third of the cost, or maybe a fifth of the cost of what we would go to pay one of those operators to do that. And so there are options out there available to you. I really like the co-working environment. I really like the concept of working in a place where you develop a lot of synergy with a lot of other people doing a lot of really interesting things. You're building your networks, you're building business relationships that can help you down the road, and you're just having fun. And sometimes you and me working in this room, it might not be so fun because outside that door, there's not a lot of fun. But if we were to do this in a co-working space, hey, there's an event this afternoon, we're doing beers on Fridays, you know, we're having a talk on Wednesday, whatever it might be. Those are all great things. But I would also caution companies to recognize the value of what they're paying for that, and there are other ways to get it.
All right. Where can people contact you, Bill, if they have additional questions on co-working or on real estate in general?
Sure. The main number to our office is 303-228-0800. My email is bbaldwin, that's B as in boy, B-A-L-D-W-I-N, at Cresa, C-R-E-S-A, .com.
Excellent. Bill Baldwin, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Joel. Appreciate it.
That was Bill Baldwin, Managing Principal at Cresa. Learn more at Cresa.com. That's C-R-E-S-A. And follow the company on Twitter at Cresa Corp. The Boulder Tech Podcast is made possible in part by Glider, a Colorado-based community movement and nonprofit that produces Boulder's Ignite and TEDx events, as well as Boulder Startup Week. Learn more and consider a donation at glider.com. Thanks to Dojo 4 for providing space for our podcast studio, and to KGNU Community Radio for recording gear and studio usage. Our intro music is by Echo Deck. Hear more at echodeck.com. That's E-C-C-O-D-E-K. Our outro music is by Earthrise Sound System. You'll find them at earthrisesoundsystem.com. The Boulder Tech Podcast is produced by me, Joel Davis. Your feedback, criticisms, comments, and guest suggestions are welcome. Reach me at joel@dojo4.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here for the next episode of the Boulder Tech Podcast.